said. It'll be good to go. They drove over the drawbridge to the very edge of City Island and parked the car behind a restaurant. Then, sitting in the snow, they took turns blowing up the raft like they were passing around a joint. How are we going to attract those mermaids? Corny asked, while Luis huffed into the little tube. Kay picked up a receipt from the floor of his car. You got something pointy? Corny searched through his backpack until he came up with a discarded safety pin. She poked her finger and, wincing, smeared her blood onto the paper. Walking to the edge of the water, she dropped it in. I'm Kay Fiersch, she said firmly. A pixie. A Seelie Court changeling on a quest for the King of the Night Court. I come here and ask for your help. I ask for your help. 3 times I ask for your help. Corny looked at her, standing in front of the water, her green hair pulled back from her glamoured face, her battered purple coat blown by the wind. For the first time, he thought that even in her human guise she had somehow grown formidable. Heads bobbed in the black water, pale hair floating around them like seagrass. Kay went down on her knees. I ask that you bring us 3 to Heart Island safely. We have a boat. All you have to do is pull it. And what will you give us, Pixie? They answered in their melodious voices. Their teeth were translucent and sharp, like they were made of cartilage. Kay walked back to the car and brought out the ShopRite plastic bag full of meat. She held up a raw and dripping shank. Flesh, she said. We accept, said the mermaids. Kay, Corny, and Luis dragged the boat onto the water and pushed off. The mermaids swam around them, pushing the boat and singing softly as they went, their voices so beautiful and insistent that Corny found himself dazed. Kay appeared tense, sitting at the prow like a ship's figurehead. Looking over the side, Corny saw a mermaid coming up through the water, and for a moment it seemed like she wore his sister's face, blue with cold and death. He looked away. I know who you are, one of them said to Luis, coming up to the side, her white, webbed hand reaching up onto the side of the boat. You brought my sisters the troll's potion. He nodded, swallowing. I could teach you how to heal better, the mermaid whispered, if you came with me under the water. Corny put his hand on Luis's arm, and Luis jumped as if he'd been stung. The mermaid turned her head toward Corny. What about vengeance? I could give you that. You lost someone to the sea. Corny choked. What? You want it, she said. I know that you do. The mermaid reached up, her webbed hand settling on the side of the raft near Corny. Scales skived off, shining on the rubber. I could give you the power, she told him. Corny looked down at her gelatinous eyes and her thin, sharp teeth. Envy curled in his gut. She was beautiful and terrible and magical. But the feeling was distant, like being envious of a sunset. I don't need any more power, he said, and was surprised to find he meant it. And if he wanted vengeance, he'd get it on his own. Kay made a soft noise. Corny looked up. There on the far shore, behind heaps of mussel shells, a great crowd of beings had gathered. And beyond them, abandoned buildings stood near rows and rows of graves. Chapter 13. Thou art the unanswered question. Couldst see thy proper eye, alway it asketh, asketh, and each answer is a lie. Ralph Waldo Emerson, The Sphinx. Kay pushed through the crowd with Corny and Luis, shoving lavender-skinned bodies and batting aside clouds of pin-sized sprites. A fuca with a goat head and dead white eyes called to her as she passed, licking its teeth with a cat's tongue.
Lixie, Trixie, Pixie!
Ducking beneath the arm of an ogre, Kay leaped onto a grave marker to avoid 3 spindly hobmen locked in an embrace in the dirt. From the top of the marker, she surveyed the court. She saw Ruddles drinking from a bowl and passing it to a number of other animal-headed beings. Elibert stood beside him, hair fading from wine to gold as it fell over his shoulders, his armor a deep and mossy green. Reuben himself was talking animatedly to a woman as slim as a wand, her long black hair knotted into a jeweled cape that draped over her back to match the long and twitching tail that was also hung with jewels. From where she was, Kay couldn't tell whether or not they were arguing, only that he leaned far forward and the woman was gesturing with her hands. Then, abruptly, Reuben turned and looked in Kay's direction. Kay was so surprised that she fell. She forgot to flap her wings. Her head hit a stone and tears sprung to her eyes. For a moment she just lay there, resting her head against the ground and listening to the folk milling around her. It was awful to be so near him. Awful how her heart leapt.
"You shouldn't eat the bones if you chew them like that," she heard someone say nearby. "They're too sharp. Cut up your insides."
"Haven't you become a little beetle flower?" said another voice.
"Marrow's better than meat, but you've got to go through the bones to get it."
Corny reached out a hand to pull Kay to her feet. "I don't think he saw you."
"Perhaps not, but I did."
A woman, her wings so tattered that only the veins hung from her back, looked down at Kay. She held a knife that curved like a snake, and her armor gleamed the same shining purple as the carapace of a beetle.
"Dulcamara," Kay said, standing. "My friends need to talk to Reuben."
"Perhaps after the duel," she said.
Her pink eyes regarded Kay with contempt.
"They have to talk to him now," said Kay. "Please, he can't duel. He has to call it off."
Dulcamara licked the edge of her blade, painting it with her mouth's blood.
"I will play messenger. Give me your words, and I will carry them to him with my own tongue."
"They have to tell him themselves."
Dulcamara shook her head.
"I will allow no more distractions from you than he has already borne."
Corny stepped up. "Just for a moment. It'll only take a moment. He knows me."
"Mortals are liars. They can't help it," said the fairy knight.
Kay could see her teeth were as sharp as the knife in her hand, and unlike the mermaids, hers were bone. She smiled at Corny.
"It's your nature."
"Then let me go," Kay said. "I'm no mortal."
"You can't." Luis put his hand on her shoulder. "Remember, he's not allowed to see you."
"Mortals are liars. Liars."
"Indeed," Dulcamara said. "Get close to him and I will run you through. No more of the glamoured games you played in the Seelie Court."
Over and over, Kay heard the words repeat. Liars, untruth, lie, lying, dying, dead. She thought about Corny's fairy chess. She had to change the rules of the game. She had to solve the quest. She had to be the single variation. But how could she lie without lying? Kay looked over at where Reuben stood, his armor being strapped onto his back. His long hair had two plates braided in the front, each one wrapped with a sharp silver clasp at the end. He looked pale, his face pinched as with pain.
"Oh,"
Kay said, and then she leaped into the air.
"Stop!"
Dulcamara shouted, but Kay was already in the air, her wings flapping frantically. For a moment, she had a view of the lighthouse on the far shore of City Island and the glimmering city lights beyond, and in that moment she realized that she could keep flying, up and up and up. She half landed, half fell at Reuben's feet instead.
"You,"
he said, and she couldn't parse the tone of his voice. Elibert grabbed her wrists and wrenched them behind her back.
"This is no place for a pixie."
Ruddles pointed at her with a clawed hand.
"To stand before our lord and king, you must have completed your quest. If not, custom allows us to rend you."
"I don't care what custom dictates," Reuben pronounced, waving off his chamberlain.
When he looked at Kay, his eyes were empty of any emotion she knew.
"Where is my sister?"
"Solariel's got her," Kay said in a rush. "Athene's what I came to talk to you about."
For the first time since the tithe, she was afraid of him. She no longer believed that he would not hurt her. He looked as though he might relish it. Lick the Queen of the Seely Court's hand, Wrath Reuben Riven. Lick it like the dog you are.
My lord, said Ruddles, though I would not choose to contradict you, she may not remain in your presence. She hasn't completed the quest you bestowed on her.
I said leave her, Reuben shouted.
I can lie, Kay choked out, her heart beating like a drum against her skin. The ground tilted under her feet, and everyone around her went silent. She had no idea if she could pull this off.
I can lie. I am the fairy that can lie.
That's nonsense, said Ruddles. Prove it.
Are you saying that I can't?
Kay asked.
No fairy can tell an untruth.
So, Kay said, letting out her breath in a dizzy rush. If I say I can lie and you say I can't, then one of us must be telling an untruth, right? So either I am a fairy that can lie, or you are. Either way, I have completed my quest.
That reeks of a riddle, but I see no fault, the Chamberlain said.
Reuben made a sound, but she couldn't tell if it was an objection. She thought it might have been a laugh.
Clever.
Ruddle's grin was full of teeth, but he patted her on the back.
We accept your answer with pleasure.
I suppose you have succeeded, Kay, said Reuben. His voice was soft. From this moment forward, your fate is tied to the Unseely Court. Until the time of my death, you are my consort.
Tell them to let me go, Kay said.
She'd won, but her victory felt as hollow as a blown egg.
Since you're my consort, you may tell them yourself, said Reuben.
He did not meet her eyes.
They ought not deny you now.
Elibert dropped Kay's arms before she could speak. Stumbling, she turned to glare at him and Ruddles.
Go,
she said, trying to sound commanding. Her voice broke. They looked to Reuben and moved at his nod. It was still hardly privacy, but it was the closest she was likely to get.
Why have you come here? He asked.
She wanted to beg him to be the Reuben she knew. The one who said she was the only thing he wanted. The one who hadn't betrayed her and didn't hate her.
Look at me. Why won't you look at me?
The sight of you is a torment.
His eyes, when he raised them, were full of shadows.
I thought if I kept you out of this war, it would be the same as keeping you safe. But there you were, in the middle of the Seely Court, as though to prove me a fool. And here you are again, courting danger. I only wanted to save one thing, just one thing, to prove there was some good in me after all.
I am not a thing, Kay told him.
He closed his eyes for a moment, covering them with long fingers.
Yes, of course. I shouldn't have said that.
She caught his hands and he let her draw them from his face. They were as cold as the falling snow.
What are you doing to yourself? What's going on?
When I became king of the Unseely Court, I thought we could not win the war. I thought that I would fight and I would die. There is a kind of mad glee in accepting death as an inevitable cost.
Why? Kay asked. Why bind yourself to such a miserable fate? Why not just say, screw this, I'm going to make birdhouses or something?
To kill Solariel.
His eyes glittered like chips of glass.
If she isn't stopped, no one will be safe from her cruelty. It was so hard not to crush her neck when I kissed her. Could you tell it from my face, Kay? Did you see my hand tremble?
Kay heard her own blood pounding at her temples. Could she really have confused loathing with longing? Recalling the blood on Solariel's mouth, she thought of the way his eyes had seemed glazed over with passion. Now it seemed closer to madness.
Then why did you kiss?
Because they're my people.
Reuben swept his hand over the field, taking in the graveyard and the prison.
I want to save them. I needed her to believe I was in her power so she might agree to my terms. I know it must have seemed...
Stop!
Kay felt a cold finger of dread shiver up her spine. "I came here to tell you something," she said. "Something I figured out about the battle."
He raised a single silvery brow. "What is it?"
"Salariel's going to choose Athene as her champion."
His laugh was almost a sob, short and terrible.
"Call off the duel," Kay said. "Find some excuse. Don't fight."
I wondered what terrible thing she might set against me. What monster? What magic? I forgot how clever she is.
"You don't have to fight Athene."
He shook his head. "You don't understand. Far too much is at stake tonight." Coldness spread from her heart to freeze her body.
"What are you going to do?"
Her voice came out sharper than she'd intended.
"I'm going to win," he said. "And you would do me a great service if you told Salariel that I said so."
"You wouldn't hurt Athene."
"I think it's time that you went, Kay."
Reuben swung a strap with his scabbard attached over his shoulder.
"I won't ask you to forgive me, because I don't deserve it. But I did love you."
He looked down as he said the words.
"I do love you."
"Then stop doing this. Stop not telling me shit. I don't care if it's for my own good or whatever stupid reason."
"I am telling you shit," Reuben said,
and hearing him swear made her laugh. He smiled back, just a little, like he got the joke. In that one moment, he seemed heart-rendingly familiar. He reached out, still smiling, as though he were going to touch her face, but he traced the shape of her hair instead. It was not even a real touch, feather-light and never coming to rest, as though he were afraid to dare more. She shivered.
"If you really can lie," he said, "tell me this will end well tonight."
Icy air blew up a thin flurry of snow and tossed back Reuben's hair as he strode past Graves to the area marked for the duel. The knight and bright courts waited restlessly in a loose circle, whispering and chittering, pulling their cloaks of skin and fur closer. Kay hurried behind the edge of the crowd to where the bright queen's courtiers stood, their shimmering gowns blown by the wind. Elibert and Dulcamara walked beside Reuben, their insect-like armor glittering against the frost-covered landscape and the stone markers. Reuben dressed as gray as the overcast sky. Talithane and another knight flanked Salariel. They wore green-stained leather with gilt bumps that studded their shoulders and their arms like the markings on a caterpillar. Reuben bent in so deep a bow that he might have touched his lips to the snow. Salariel made only a shallow bob. Reuben cleared his throat.
"For decades there has been a truce between the Seelie and the Unseelie courts. I am both proof of and witness to that old bargain, and I would broker it again. Lady Salariel, do you agree that if I defeat your champion, you will concede a concord between our two courts?"
"If you deal my champion a mortal blow..."
"I so swear," Salariel said.
"If my champion lies dying on this field, you will have your peace."
"And do you have a further wager in this battle?" he asked her.
She smiled.
"I will also give over my throne to the Lady Athene. Gladly I will set the crown of the Seelie Court upon her head, kiss her cheeks, and step down to be her subject should you win."
Kay could see Reuben's face from where she stood, but she could not read his expression.
"And if I die on the field of battle," Reuben said, "you shall rule over the Unseelie Court in my place, Lady Salariel. To this I agree."
"And now I must name my champion," said Salariel, a smile slitting her face. "Lady Athene, take up arms for me. You are to be the defender of the bright court."
There was a terrible silence among the gathered throng. Athene shook her head mutely. The wind and the shifting snow came down as the tableau held.
"How you must hate me," Reuben said softly, But the wind seemed to catch those words and blow them out to the audience. Solariel turned in her frosting white dress and strode from the field to her bower of ivy. Her people clad Athene in a thin armor and placed a long sword in her limp grip.
"Go,"
Roibin told Elibera and Dulcamara. Reluctantly, they left the field. Kay could see the doubt in the faces of the Unseelie court, the tension as Ruddles ground his teeth together and watched Athene with gleaming black eyes. They had thrown in their lot with Roibin, but his loyalties were uncertain and never more so than at this moment. Habman paced the outside edge of the ring, scattering herbs to mark its boundaries. At the center of the snowy bank, Roibin made a stiff bow and drew his sword. It curved like a crescent moon and shone like water.
"You don't mean to do this," Athene said,
but in her mouth it was a question.
"Are you ready, Athene?"
Roibin brought his sword up so that the blade seemed to bisect his face, casting half into shadow. Athene shook her head.
"No."
Kay could see Roibin's sister shiver convulsively. Tears ran down her pale cheeks. She dropped her sword.
"Pick it up,"
he said patiently, as if to a child.
Hurrying, Kay walked to where the bright lady of the Seelie court sat. Talithane raised his bow but did not stop her. The sound of blades crashing together made her turn back to the fight. Athene staggered back, the weight of her sword clearly overbalancing her. Kay felt sick.
Solaria looked down from her perch, coppery hair plaited with deep blue berries knotting a golden circlet atop her head. She smoothed the skirt of her white gown.
"Kay," she said, "what a surprise. Are you surprised?"
He knew it was going to be Athene before he went out there, you know. Solariel frowned.
"Oh?"
"I told him." Kay sat down on the dais. "After I figured out his stupid quest."
"So you're consort to the king of the Unseelie court?"
Solariel raised one eyebrow. Her smile was pitying.
"I'm surprised you still want him."
That stung. Kay would have protested, but the words twisted in her mouth.
"But then, you will only be his consort as long as he lives."
The bright lady turned her gaze to the two figures fighting in the snow. "Oh, come on," Kay said. "You act like he's the same kid you sent away. Do you know what he did when I told him about Athene?" "He laughed. He laughed and said he'd win."
"No,"
said Solariel, turning too quickly.
"I cannot believe he would play cat and mouse first if he intended to kill her."
Kay squinted. "Is that what he's doing? Maybe it's just not easy to murder your own sister." Solariel shook her head.
"He craves death, just as he craves me, though perhaps he wishes he didn't want either.
He will let her stab him and perhaps tell her some sweet thing with a mouth full of blood. All this taunting is to make her angry. Make her swing hard enough for a killing blow. I know him as you do not." Kay closed her eyes against that thought, then forced them open. She didn't know. She honestly didn't know if he would kill his sister or not. She didn't even know what to want. Both choices were so terrible.
"I don't think so," she said carefully. "I don't think he wants to. But he's killed a lot of people he didn't want to kill."
As if on cue, there was a great cry from the audience. Athene lay in the snow, struggling to sit up, the tip of Roibin's curved blade at her throat. He smiled down at her kindly, as if she had merely fallen and he was about to help her up again.
"Nicnevin forced him to kill,"
Solariel said quickly. Kay let the anger she felt bleed into her voice.
"Now you're forcing him."
Roibin's words carried over the field.
"Since it seems that the crown of the Bright Court will come to you after your death, tell me upon whom you wish to bestow it. Let me do this last thing for you as your brother."
Relief flooded Kay. There was a plan. He had a plan.
"Hold!"
Solariel shouted, leaping up from her makeshift throne and striding out onto the field.
That was not part of the bargain.
As she passed through the ring of herbs, they caught with greenish fire. Wailing rose from the unseelie folk while the bright court went deathly silent. Reuben stepped back from his sister, taking the blade from her throat. Athene fell back in the snow, turning her head so that no one might see her face.
Neither was your interrupting this fight, he said. You may not reconsider our bargain now that it no longer favors you.
His words silenced the unseelie court's cries, but Kay could hear the rest of the crowd murmur in confusion. Athene stumbled to her feet. Reuben extended his hand to help her, but she didn't take it. She looked at him with hate in her eyes, but there was no less hate when she looked toward her mistress. She picked up her sword and held it so tightly her knuckles went white.
My oath was that the crown would go to Athene if you killed my champion. I did not promise that she could choose a successor.
Solario's voice sounded shrill.
That was not yours to promise, Reuben said.
What is hers in death, she may give with her last breath. Perhaps she will even pass it back to you.
Unlike the unseelie crown that is won by blood, the seelie successor is chosen.
I will not have my crown bestowed by one of my own handmaidens, nor will I be lessened by one who once knelt at my feet. You are not one part what Nick Nevin was.
And you are too much like her, said Reuben.
Three seely knights strode onto the field, clustering close enough to Reuben that were he to move toward Solarial, they might be faster.
Let me remind you that my forces overwhelm yours, said Solarial. Were our people to fight, even now I would win. I think that gives me leave to dictate terms.
Will you void our agreement, then? Reuben asked. Will you stop this duel?
Before I let you have my crown, Solarial spit.
Elibear! Reuben shouted.
The unseelie knight drew a little wooden flute from inside the wrist of his armor and brought it to his mouth. He blew three clear notes that traveled over the suddenly quiet crowd. At the edges of the island, things began to move. Merfolk pulled themselves onto shore. Fairies appeared from the abandoned buildings, stepped from the woods, and rose out of graves. An ogre with a greening beard crossed a pair of bronze sickles over his chest, a thin troll with shaggy black hair, goblins holding daggers of broken glass. The denizens of the parks and the streets and the shining buildings had come. The exiled Fae. The crowd's murmuring became shouts. Some of the assemblage scrambled for arms. The solitary Fae and the Night Court moved to surround the Seelie Court gentry.
You planned an ambush?
Solario demanded.
I've been making some alliances.
Reuben looked as though he were swallowing a smile.
Some, many, of the exiled Fae were interested to know that I would accept them into my court. I would guarantee their safety, even, for a mere day and night of service. Tonight, today, you are not the only one with machinations, my lady.
I see you have played to some purpose, said Solario.
She looked at him as though he were a stranger.
What is it? For what do you scheme? Athene's death would weigh on you and the stain of her blood would seep into your skin.
Do you know what they wish for when they give you the unseelie crown?
Reuben's tone was soft, like he was telling a secret. Kay could barely catch his words.
That you be made of ice.
What makes you think it matters what I feel? What makes you think I feel anything at all? Surrender your crown to my sister.
I will not, said Solario. I will never.
Then there will be a battle, Reuben said. And when the unseelie court is victorious, I will snatch that crown from your head and grant it as I see fit.
All wars have casualties.
Solario nodded to someone in the crowd. Talithane's hand came down hard over Kay's mouth. fingers dug into the soft pad of her cheek and the flesh of her side as she was dragged onto the field.
"Make one move. Make one command," said Solarial, turning to Kay with a smile. "And she will be the first."
"Ah, Talathane, how you have fallen," Roybon said. "I thought you were her knight, but you have become only her woodsman, taking little girls to the forest to cut out their hearts."
Talathane's grip on Kay tightened, making her gasp. She tried to tamp down her terror, tried to convince herself that if she stayed very still, she could figure a way out of this. No ideas came.
"Now give up your crown, Roybon," Solarial said. "Give it up to me as you should have when you got it, as fit tribute to your queen."
"You're not his queen,"
Athene said, her voice numb.
"And neither are you mine."
Solarial spun toward her, and Athene plunged her blade into the Bright Queen's chest. Hot blood pocked the snow, melting dozens of tiny craters as though someone had scattered rubies. Solarial stumbled, her face a mask of surprise, and then she dropped. Talathane shouted, but he was too late, much too late. He pushed Kay out of his arms. She fell on her hands and knees near the Bright Queen's body. Stepping over them both, he swung his golden sword at Athene. She waited for the blow, not moving to defend herself. Roybon stepped in front of her in time to catch the sword with his back. The edge sliced through his armor, opening a long red line from his shoulder to his hip. Gasping, he fell with Athene beneath him. She shrieked. Roybon rolled off of her and into a crouch, but Talathane had knelt beside Solarial, turning her pale face with a gloved hand. Her ancient eyes stared up at the gray sky, but no breath stirred her lips. Roybon stood stiffly, slowly. Athene's body shook with shallow sobs. Talathane looked over at her.
"What have you done?" he demanded.
Athene tore at her dress and her hair until Kay caught her hands.
"He did not deserve to be used so," she said,
her voice thick with tears and mad fairy laughter. Her sharp nails sank into Kay's flesh, but Kay didn't let go.
"It's done," Kay soothed,
but she was frightened. She felt as though she were on stage, performing a play, while the hordes of the Unseelie Court and the exiled Fae waited uneasily for a signal to crash down upon the Seelie Court they surrounded.
"Come on, stand up, Athene."
Roybon cut the golden circlet from Solarial's hair. Chunks of braided, coppery strands and berries hung from it as he held it aloft.
"That crown is not yours," said Talathane,
but his voice lacked conviction. He looked from the Unseelie Court to the exiled Fae. Behind him, the champions of the Bright Court had moved to the edge of the dueling grounds, but their expressions were grave.
"I was just getting it for my sister," Roybon said.
Athene shuddered at the sight of the circlet, caught with hair and ice.
"Here," Roybon said, picking it clean with quick fingers and shining it against the leather of his breastplate.
It came away red as rubies. His brows knitted in confusion, and Kay saw that his armor was wet with blood, that it seeped down his arm to cover his hand in a dripping glove of gore.
"Your—"
Kay said, and stopped.
"Your hand,"
she'd almost said. But it wasn't his hand that was hurt.
"Put your puppet on the throne," said Talathane. "You may make her queen, but she won't be queen for long."
Athene trembled. Her face was pale as paper.
"My brother needs his attendants."
"You brought her flowers," Roybon said. "Don't you remember?"
Talathane shook his head.
"That was a very long time ago, before she killed my queen. No, she won't rule for long. I'll see to that."
Roybon's face went slack, stunned.
"Very well,"
he said slowly, as though he were puzzling out the words as he said them.
"If you would not swear loyalty to her..."
Perhaps you will kneel and swear your loyalty to me.
The Seely crown must be given. You cannot murder your way to it.
Talithane pointed his sword at Roiben.
Wait, Kay said, pulling Athene to her feet. Who do you want to get the crown?
Talithane's sword didn't waver.
It doesn't matter what she says.
It does, Kay shouted. Your queen made Athene her heir. Like it or not, she gets to say what happens now.
Ruddles strode out onto the field, giving Kay a quick smile as he passed her. He cleared his throat.
When one court ambushes and conquers the gentry of another court, their rules of inheritance are not applicable.
We'll be following unseelie custom, Dulcamara purred.
No, Kay said. It's Athene's choice who gets the crown or if she keeps it.
Ruddles started to speak, but Roiben shook his head.
Kay is correct. Let my sister decide.
Take it, Athene told him hollowly. Take it and be damned.
Roiben's fingers traced over the symbols on the crown with his thumb. He sounded distant and strange.
It seems I will be coming home after all.
Talithane took a step toward Athene. Kay dropped her hand, wanting to be ready, although she had no idea what she'd do if he swung.
How can you give this monster sovereignty over us? He would have paid for his peace with your death.
He wouldn't have killed her, Kay said.
Athene looked away.
You have all turned into monsters.
Now the price of peace is merely her hatred, said Roiben. That I am willing to pay.
I will never accept you as king of the Seely Court, Talithane spat.
Roiben set the circlet on his brow. Blood smudged his silver hair.
It is done, whether you accept it or no, said Ruddles. Let me finish the duel in your sister's place, said Talithane. Fight me.
Coward, Kay said. He's already hurt.
Your bright lady broke her compact with us, said Dulcamara.
She turned to Roiben.
Let me kill this knight for you, my lord.
Fight me, Talithane demanded.
Roiben nodded. Reaching into the snow, he lifted his own sword. It was cloudy with cold.
Let's give them the duel they came for.
Talithane and Roiben circled each other slowly, their feet careful, their bodies swaying toward each other like snakes, both their blades extended so that they nearly touched. Talithane slammed his blade down. Roiben parried hard, shoving the other knight back. Talithane kept the distance. He stepped in, swung, then retreated quickly, staying just outside Roiben's range as if he were waiting for him to tire. A single rivulet of blood ran like sweat down Roiben's sword arm and onto his blade.
You're wounded, Talithane reminded him.
How long do you really think you can last?
Long enough, Roiben said.
But Kay saw the wetness of his armor and the jerkiness of his movements and wasn't sure. It seemed to her that Roiben was fighting a mirror self, as though he were desperate to cut down what he might have become.
Salaria was right about you, was she not? Said Talithane. She said you wanted to die. Come find out.
Roiben swept the sword in an arc so swiftly that the air sung. Talithane parried, their blades crashing together, edge to flat. Talithane recovered fast and thrust at Roiben's left side. Twisting away, Roiben grabbed the other knight's pommel, forcing Talithane's sword up and kicking against his foot. Talithane fell in the snow. Roiben stood over him, pointing the blade at the knight's throat. Talithane went still.
Come and get the crown if you want it. Come and take it from me.
Kay wasn't sure if she heard a threat or a plea in those words. Talithane didn't move. A fairy with skin like pine cones, rough and cracked, took Talithane's golden sword from his hands. Another spat into the grimy snow.
You'll never hold both courts, Talithane said, struggling to his knees.
Roiben teetered a little, and Kay put her arm under his. He hesitated a moment before leaning his weight against her. She nearly staggered.
"We'll hold the Bright Court just as your mistress would have held us,"
Dulcamara purred, squatting down beside him, a shining knife touching his cheek, the point pressing against the skin.
"Pinned down in the dirt. Now tell your new lord what a fine little puppy his cleverness has bought him. Tell him you'll bark at his command."
Athene stood stiff and still. She closed her eyes.
"I will not serve the unseelie court," Talithane said to Reuben. "I will not become like you."
"I envy you that choice," said Reuben. "I'll make him bark," Dulcamara said.
"No," Reuben said. "Let him go."
She looked up, surprised, but Talithane was already on his feet, pushing his way through the crowd as Ruddles called out,
"Behold our undoubted Lord Reuben, king of both the Unseelie and the Seelie courts. Make your obeisances to him."
Reuben swayed slightly, and Kay tightened her grip. Somehow he remained standing, although his blood slicked her hand.
"I'll be better than she was,"
she heard him say. His voice was all breath. Chapter 14. In a certain faraway land, the cold is so intense that words freeze as soon as they are uttered, and after some time then thaw and become audible so that words spoken in winter go unheard until the next summer. Plutarch, Moralia. When Kay and Corny walked into the small apartment, Kate was lying on an air mattress in the middle of the floor. She was drawing in a magazine. Kay could see that the little girl had blacked out Angelina Jolie's eyes and was in the process of drawing bat wings over Paris Hilton's shoulder blades.
"Cute kid," said Corny. "Reminds me of you."
"We got lo mein and veggie dumplings." Kay shifted the bag in her arms. "Grab a plate. It's leaking on my hand." Kate scrambled to her feet and pushed back a tangle of dirty blonde hair.
"I don't want it."
"Okay."
Kay set the cartons on the kitchen counter. "What do you want?"
"When's Alan coming home?"
Kate looked up, and Kay could see her brown eyes were rimmed with red, as though she'd recently been crying. "When her rehearsal's over." The first time Kay had met Kate, the girl had hidden under the table. Kay wasn't sure if this was better.
"She said she wouldn't be that late, so don't freak out."
"We don't bite," Corny put in. Kate picked up her magazine and climbed up on Ellen's bed, scooching over to the far corner. She tore off tiny pieces and rolled them between her fingers. Kay sucked in a breath. The air in the apartment tasted like cigarettes and human girl, at once familiar and strange. Kate scowled ferociously and threw the balled-up paper at Corny. He dodged. Opening the refrigerator, Kay took out a slightly withered orange. There was a block of cheddar with mold covering one end. Kay chopped off the greenish fur and put the remaining lump on a piece of bread.
"I'll grill you some cheese. Eat the orange while you wait."
"I don't want it,"
Kate said. "Just give her bread and water like the little prisoner she is." Corny leaned back on Ellen's bed, cushioning his head with a pile of laundry. "Man, I hate babysitting." Kate picked up the orange and threw it against the wall. It bounced like a leather ball, hitting the floor with a dull thud. Kay had no idea what to do. She felt paralyzed by guilt. The girl had every reason to hate her. Corny switched on the tiny television set. The channels were fuzzy, but he finally found one that was clear enough to show Buffy staking three vampires as Giles clocked her with a stopwatch. "Rerun," Corny said. "Perfect. Kate, this should teach you everything you need to know about being a normal American teenager." He looked up at Kay. "There's even the sudden addition of a sister in it."
"She's not my sister," the girl said. "She just stole my name."
Kay stopped, the words like a kick to the gut.
"I don't have a name of my own," she said slowly. "Yours is the only one I've got."
Kate nodded, her eyes still on the screen.
"So what was it like?" Corny asked. Fairyland? Kate tore off a larger chunk of the magazine, crushing it in her fist.
There was a pretty lady who braided my hair and fed me apples and sang to me. And there were others, the goat man and the blackberry boy. Sometimes they would tease me, she frowned. And sometimes they would forget me.
Do you miss them? He asked.
I don't know. I slept a lot. Sometimes I would wake up and the leaves would have changed without me seeing them.
Kay felt cold all over. She wondered if she'd ever get used to the casual cruelty of fairies and hoped she wouldn't. At least here, among humans, Kate would wake up each day until there was no more waking. Kay fidgeted with the sleeves of her sweater, worming her thumbs through the weave.
Do you want to be Kay and I'll be Kate? You're stupid and you don't even act like a fairy.
How about I make you a deal? Kay said. I'll teach you about being human, and you teach me about being a fairy. She winced at how lame that sounded, even to her. The frown hadn't faded from Kate's face, but she looked like she was thinking things through. I'll even help, Corny said. We can start by teaching you human curse words. Maybe we could skip the fairy curses, though. Corny took a deck of cards out of his backpack. Printed on the back of each was a different cinema robot. Or we could try poker.
You shouldn't bargain with me,
the girl said, as though by rote. She looked smug.
Mortal promises aren't worth the hair on a rat's tail. That's your first lesson.
Noted, Kay said. And hey, we could also teach you the joys of human food. Kate shook her head.
I want to play the cards.
By the time Ellen walked in, Corny had beaten them both out of all the spare change they'd found in their pockets or under Ellen's bed. Law and Order was playing on the television, and Kate had agreed to eat a single fortune cookie. Her fortune had read, "Someone will invite you to a karaoke party." Hey, one of the guys on the street was selling bootleg movies for $2, Ellen said, throwing her coat onto a chair and dumping the rest of her stuff onto the floor. I got a couple for you kids. Bet the back of someone's head blocks the screen, Kay warned. Ellen picked at the noodles on the counter. Anyone eating these? Kay walked over. Kate didn't want them. Ellen lowered her voice. I can't tell if she's just a picky eater or if it's some thing. Doesn't like sauces, barely can stand cooked food at all. Not like you. You used to eat like you had a tapeworm. Kay busied herself packing up what was left of the food. She wondered if every memory would snag, like wool on a thorn, making her wonder if it was a symptom of her strangeness. Everything okay? Ellen asked her. I guess I'm not used to sharing you, Kay said softly. Ellen smoothed Kay's green hair back from her head. You'll always be my baby, baby. She looked into Kay's eyes a long moment, then turned and lit a cigarette off the stove. But your kid-sitting days are just beginning. Luis didn't want enchantments or glamours to pay for his brother's funeral, and so he got what he could afford. A box of ashes and no service. Corny drove him to pick them up from an ancient funeral director who handed over what looked like a cookie tin. Although the sky was overcast, the snow on the ground had turned to slush. Luis had been in New York since the duel, dealing with clients and trying to hunt up enough paperwork to prove that Dave really was his brother. What are you going to do with the ashes? Corny asked, climbing back into the car. I guess I should scatter them, said Luis. He leaned against the cracked plastic seat. Someone had tightened up his herringbone braids, and they shone like ropes of dark silk when he tilted his head. But it freaks me out. I keep thinking of the ashes like powdered milk. You know, if I just add water, they'll reconstitute into my brother. Corny rested his hands against the steering wheel. You could keep them. Get an urn. Get a mantle to put it on. No. Luis smiled. I'm going to take his ashes to Heart Island. He was good at finding things, places. He would have loved an entirely abandoned island. And then he'll be resting near my parents. That's nice. Nicer than some funeral home with a bunch of relatives who don't know what to say. It could be on New Year's, like a wake. Corny nodded, but when he moved to put the key in the ignition, Luis's hand stopped him. When he turned, their mouths met.
"I'm sorry that I've been," Luis said, between kisses, "distracted by everything. Is it morbid that I'm talking?"
Corny murmured something that he hoped sounded like agreement as Luis's fingers dug into his hips, pushing him up so they could crush their bodies closer together. 3 days later, they brought another package of meat to the mermaids for a ride to Heart Island. Corny had found a vintage blue tuxedo jacket to put on over a pair of jeans, while Luis slouched in his baggy hoodie and engineer boots. Kay had borrowed one of her grandmother's black dresses and had pinned her green hair up with tiny rhinestone butterflies. The mermaids insisted on taking 3 of the hairpins along with the steak. Corny looked back at the city behind them, shining so brightly that the sky over it looked almost like day. Even here, it was too light for stars. "Do you think the Coast Guard is going to spot us?" Corny asked. Luis shook his head. "Reuben said not." Kay looked up. "When did you talk to him?" Touching the scar beside his lip ring, Luis shrugged. "He came to see me. He said that he formally extended his protection. I can go wherever I want and see whatever I see in his lands, and no one can put up my eyes. I gotta tell you, it's more of a relief than I thought it would be." Kay looked down at her hands.
"I don't know what I'm going to say to him tonight."
"You are a consort. Shouldn't you be consorting?" Ludi asked. "Or maybe you can send him on a quest of his own. Make him build you a palace of paper plates."
Kay's mouth quirked at the corner. "You should definitely ask for a better palace than that. Reinforced cardboard, at least." Corny poked her in the side. "How did you solve his quest, anyway?" She turned and opened her mouth. Someone shouted from the shore. A girl with a head full of gingery stubble was calling to them as she dragged her canoe up onto the island. Beside her, a golden-eyed troll unpacked bottles of pink champagne and a package of snapped-together plastic glasses. Another human girl danced on the sand, her paint-stained trench coat whirling around her like a skirt. She turned to wave when she spotted them. Even Reuben was already there, leaning against a tree, his long woolen coat wet at the hem. Kay jumped out, grabbing the rope and splashing through the shallow water. She held the raft still enough for Luis and Corny to follow her. "That's Ravis," Luis said, nodding in the direction of the troll. "And Val and Ruth." "Hey!" the stubble-headed girl, Val, called. Luis squeezed Corny's hand. "Be right back." Luis walked over to them just as the stubble-haired girl popped a bottle of champagne. The cork shot out into the waves and she laughed. Corny wanted to trail after Luis, but he wasn't sure he was welcome. Kay tucked a strand of hair behind her ear and looked out at the waves.
"You can see the whole city from here. Too bad we can't see the ball drop."
"This reminds me of something in a fantasy novel," Corny told her. "You know, mysterious island, me with my trusted elven sidekick."
"I'm your trusted elven sidekick?" Kay snorted.
"Maybe not trusted," Corny said with a grin. Then he shook his head. "It's dumb, though. The part of me that loves this, that's the part that's going to get me killed. Like Dave. Like Janet."
"Do you still wish you weren't human?"
Corny frowned, glanced toward Luis and his friends. "I thought those were our secret wishes."
"You showed me it!"
Corny snorted.
"Even so."
He sighed.
"I don't know. Right now, being human is actually working out for me. It's kind of a first. What about you?"
"I just realized that I don't have to do normal things, being a fairy," Kay said. "No need to get a job, right? I can turn leaves into money if I need it. No need to go to college. What would be the point? See above, no need for a job."
"I guess education isn't its own reward."
"You ever think about the future? I mean, you remember what you and Luis were talking about in the car?"
"I guess."
He remembered that Luis had hoped Dave would go to school with him.
"I was thinking about opening a coffee shop. I thought that maybe we could have it be a front, and in the back, there'd be a library with real information on fairies, and maybe an office for Luis to break curses out of.
You could work on the computers, keep the internet running, make some searchable databases.
Yeah?
Corny could picture green walls and dark wood trim and copper cappuccino machines hissing in the background. She shook her head. You think it's crazy, right? And Luis would never go for it, and I'm probably too irresponsible anyway. He grinned hugely. I think it's genius. But what about Reuben? Don't you want to go be the fairy queen or whatever? Across the field, Corny saw the troll rest a massive, monstrous hand on Luis's shoulder. Luis relaxed against the creature's bulk. The girl with the dark hair, Ruth, said something, and Val laughed. Reuben stepped away from the trees and started toward them. Luti sprung off Kay's shoulder, launching herself into the air. I thought Luis hated fairies, Kay said. Corny shrugged. You know us humans. We talk an enormous amount of shit. The funeral was simple. They all stood in a semicircle around Luis as he held up the metal tin of ashes. They'd dug a shallow pit near the edge of the numbered grave markers and passed out champagne. If you knew my brother, Luis said, his hand visibly shaking. You probably already have your own opinions about him. And I guess they're all true. But there doesn't have to be only one truth. I'm going to choose to remember David as the kid who found the two of us a place to sleep when I didn't know where to go, and as the brother that I loved. Luis opened the tin of ashes and dumped them. The wind caught some and lifted them into the air while the rest filled the hole. Corny wasn't sure what he'd thought they would look like, but the dust was gray as an old newspaper. Happy New Year, baby brother, Luis said. I wish you could drink with us tonight. Reuben stood by the water, swigging out of a bottle of champagne. He'd loosed his salt-white hair and it covered most of his face. Kay walked over to him, pulling out a noisemaker from her pocket and sticking it in her mouth. She blew and the long, checkered paper tongue unfurled with a squeak. He smiled. Kay groaned. You really are a terrible boyfriend, you know that? He nodded. A surfeit of ballads makes for odd ideas about romance. But things don't work like that, Kay said, taking the bottle from his hand and drinking from the neck. Like ballads or songs or epic poems where people do all the wrong things for the right reasons. You have completed an impossible quest and saved me from the Queen of the Fairies, he said softly. That is very like a ballad. Look, I just don't want you to keep hiding things from me. Kay said, handing him back the bottle. Or hurt my feelings because you think it's going to keep me safe, or sacrifice yourself for me. Just tell me. Tell me what's going on with you. He tipped the champagne so that the liquid fizzed on the snow, staining it pink. I taught myself to feel nothing, and you make me feel. That's why I'm a weakness? Her breath came out like a cloud in the icy air. Yes. He looked out at the black ocean and then back at her. It hurts to feel again, but I'm glad of it. I'm glad of the pain. Kay took a step closer to him. The bright sky silvered his face with light and highlighted the way the points of his ears parted his hair. He looked both alien and utterly familiar. I know I failed you, Reuben said. In the stories when you fall in love with a creature.
First I'm a thing, now I'm a creature, Kay said.
Reuben laughed.
Well, in the stories, it is often a creature, some kind of beast, a snake that becomes a woman at night, or someone cursed to be a bear until they can take off their own skin.
How about a fox? Kay asked, thinking of Solario's story of the thorn bushes. He frowned.
If you like, you're crafty enough.
Yeah, let's say a fox.
In those stories, one is often asked to do something unimaginably terrible to the creature. Cut off its head, say. A test. Not a test of love. A test of trust. Trust lifts the spell.
So you think that you should have cut off my head? Kay grinned. He rolled his eyes.
I should have accepted your declaration, whether I thought it was wise or no. I loved you too much to trust you.
I failed. Good thing I'm not really a fox, Kay said, or a snake or a bear, and good thing I'm sneaky enough to figure out a way